Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right. Hey, everybody. This is Don Williams, Sports Recruiting USA, and this is Inside College Soccer. We've got a very cool roundtable today. I'm pretty excited about. We've got Mike Avery. He'll give you his background when you hear where he's from, and Matt Mennell and Joe Cleary. And so we've got two people, myself and Joe, who primarily did women's soccer, although I had a stint of about 9 years of coaching men, and then Mike and Matt, who primarily did the men at some very good levels in this country. And today we're going to be talking about myths that we hear about college soccer and how to get recruited and all of that. So first of all, welcome, guys. How are y'all doing? Mike,
doing
Matt,
great.
Joe?
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming on board. I'm going to start with you, Mike. Why don't you give us a give everybody a quick background introduction?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me on, Don. I am Mike Avery. I'm the sporting director and head coach for Fort Wayne FC, which is a brand new club in the USL, currently playing in USL 2, but we will be moving to the USL 1 pro level in the next year or two. Prior to this project that I'm working on now with Fort Wayne FC, I spent the last 30 years in college. I played in college soccer at the NAI level at Westmont College in Santa Barbara. And then after a short professional kind of foray, got into college coaching and worked my way up through NAI level, Division II level, ultimately to the Division I level for about 20 some odd years, places like Notre Dame and Louisville, and then the last 14 years at Valparaiso University. So exciting to, again, to see all that's happening in the college soccer world and to stay plugged into it a little bit, even though I'm not actively coaching in it now. I do talk to college coaches almost every day. And so I think it's never been a more exciting time in the country in soccer, but maybe never been a more complicated time in the country. So there's a lot for people to navigate.
Thanks, Mike. And, you know, I've always appreciated your help. You've helped me place a few players and, you know, a few people I don't know. And that's the whole idea of SRUSA is the networking piece of it. Hey, Matt, how are you, partner? I appreciate you coming on, man, all the way from Asheville, North Carolina. Why don't you give everybody a quick introduction?
The service that SRUSA does is great, and what you guys are trying to do for these young players is awesome. Again, my name is Matt Mennell. I have, I'm about 3 years younger than Mike, so I'll call it 27 plus years. But I was fortunate enough, I played college soccer at the Air Force Academy and then spent time coaching there and spent a bunch of years at Loyola Marymount, was a head coach at UNC Asheville. And now I am an assistant athletic director and also men's soccer coach at Warren Wilson College, which is Division III. So I'm really just going to echo what Mike said. It is a really exciting time to be a college footballer in this country, but it's also a very interesting and challenging time. And COVID has a lot to do with that. And just, you know, there's a lot of things that are popping up, and it's been interesting to watch, you know, my own son, who's about to go play college soccer, navigate that recruiting process. And, you know, so I've had the good fortune of being able to sit on one side of the table and then over the past, you know, 18, 20 months sitting on the other side. And that's been really cool. And it's been, I've learned a lot of things about the recruiting process that I thought I knew that maybe I didn't. So, but I'm super excited to be here and kind of share my stories and provide any insight for future SRUSA clients.
Brilliant. Thanks, Matt. And we go back a long ways. I remember I had a kid who played youth for me who came and played for you at Loyola Marymount, didn't I? In Rana, right? Yeah. We go back a long way.
The first and only player I've ever had that played for the Tibetan national team.
Isn't that cool? Yeah. Him and his dad both. That's so cool.
Yeah. That's
pretty neat. Joe, how are you, man? And you're in good. Nebraska, right? Well, technically you're in Iowa right now.
I'm in Iowa now, but I live in Nebraska. Yeah. Yeah, my name is Joe Cleary. I am closing actually probably about a year with Sports Recruiting USA as a senior consultant. Before jumping over to USA, I spent 10 years as a college soccer coach, most recently as a Division II head coach for four seasons. But I've now coached at the Division I, Division II, and Division III levels. And then my current position outside of SRUSA is I work as the assistant director for advising at Iowa Western Community College, which is home to itself, two very good junior college soccer programs on the men's and the women's side, including this year's NJCAA Division I national champions for the men's soccer team. So that's what I'm doing now. And I've really enjoyed my time with SRUSA, and being on the other side of the college recruiting game has been fun.
Thanks, Joe. Yeah, pretty exciting that when I saw they won the national title, that's a good program you guys got up there. Yeah. So guys, I want to get straight into it. And so I'm going to throw out some topics and whatever it brings to your mind in it, you can talk about. Here's the first one. So if you're on a top level team, so you go play MLS Next or you play ECNL or whatever the alphabet soup is, National League, or you play in a top team, that's good enough. You're going to be playing college soccer. You're going to get recruited. What do you think about that? Because I hear it all the time. It's like, oh, my kid plays ECNL. My kid's fine. My kid's going to get recruited. What do you guys think about that? Mike, maybe you want to start on that one?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that's a little bit of a lazy thought process that family would be going through, especially in the climate that we're in today. I was on the phone yesterday with a sweatshirt school, Power 5, Division I coach who's maybe going to win a national championship this year. And he's explaining to me how they have in this 22 class players with youth national team experience, top academy experience that want to come to him and are willing to pay their own way. And he can't take them because he doesn't have a roster spot for them right now. And so again, the level that these kids have accomplished in their youth career is fantastic, but they still have a lot of work to do to find the right fit for them in the college level.
Yeah. Joe, what about on the women's side? What do you think about that? What do you see about that statement?
Yeah, I think the ECNL and these top divisions, they provide a great level of competition. I know they provide a great environment because I've recruited at them, I've coached them, I've been there. The issue is it's also become so widespread now. And the ECNL is going to mean different things in different communities. In Omaha, you know, we have a million people in our community and we have one ECNL, a full ECNL club, but there's other metropolitan areas that have 10 million people in them, 15 million people in them or more that have two or three ECNL clubs. So they're pulling from a greater player pool. So their teams are naturally going to be better. So just because you have that title attached to you does not mean that you're automatically going to get there. And there's a lot of factors that have to play on it. And one of them's where you're at in the country.
Yeah, Matt, that's a good segue to you, Matt, because you're a rare breed. You're one of the few people I know that's been able to coach D1 on the East Coast and the West Coast. And it on that question, but kind of segueing into tournaments, because I also hear, Matt, that, you know, going to the top level tournaments, you know, going to WAGs or going to MLS Next or whatever, that's automatically going to get you offers too. And I can tell you sitting at this MLS Next event, you know, coaches are talking to one or two kids or about one or two kids. They're not really focusing on the other ones. What have you noticed East Coast versus West Coast differences in approaches of the coaches or the types of events or the types of how they look at teams as far as trying to get their kids recruited?
I think maybe it's three pronged. I mean, one, good players are going to get found, and good players, they will get found. I don't necessarily agree that you have to be on an ECNL team, MLS Next team. You have to be a good player. And the network, and obviously, you know, using SRUSA will help you get found. So I do believe that. And I will say this, though, when we talk about the big events, the Final Four, the College Cup for the men is happening this coming weekend, and it's happening here in North Carolina. And NCFC is putting on their massive event. That tournament is so big with so many teams that if someone said you have to go to that tournament to be seen by a college coach, I don't know that some of those, there's going to be a ton of good players, but just due to the sheer enormity of the event,
yes,
they won't get seen at this event. Now, what could happen is they could go to the event and, you know, Mike Avery could call me and say, hey, I'm really looking for an under 18 kind of kid who can play in the midfield, for Fort Wayne, USL League 2. Do you know of anyone? I say, you know what? I saw this kid that plays for IDF out of Wake. I don't know what you're really looking for, but here's a kid's like, wow, I've never heard of that kid. I'll do some research and take a look. And in terms of the West Coast versus the East Coast, I mean, in the West Coast growing up, you recruit players, the tournament you always wanted to see is I'm going to be at Surf in the summer or Surf at Thanksgiving. You always wanted to see that. Those are the two events. And that's not a plug for the Surf. Those were the events back in the day. There were a couple other ones that started to creep up, obviously with the Development Academy and MLS Next. But then here on the East Coast, you know, are you going to be at NCFC? For all the Carolina schools, it's usually pretty good, and it's a time when the college coaches can get there. That being said, with the rise of the internet and the ability to just get information and get video, if you're a good player, you're going to have to find an advocate. And that advocate's either going to be your high school coach, your club coach, yourself, first and foremost, and then someone like SRUSA, especially if you live in a place like Asheville, North Carolina. My son spent time at the LA Galaxy Academy, but the majority of his footballing time was spent here in Asheville as a young player. And people say, well, how does he get from there to end up in, going to a Big East school to go to college? Well, he played ODP and went to an interregional, and MLS Academies came to the interregional and said, hey, wow, this is a kid that's really good. He parlays that into playing in the Big East. A pretty circuitous and long and windy road, but if you're willing to get out there and put your name out there, you can find it. So for me, I think that all the tournaments are good. I think that the reality is that if you talk to your club coach, and not whether or not they are, who cares how many players they put in college? Is playing for your team going to expose me to good coaching, good ideas, and the opportunity to play in a place where I think I might want to be seen? And, if you're playing at a club that plays in State Cup, the answer to all those questions is yes. And then you can, Disney Showcase is another one. If you hit Disney or Surf Cup or NCFC or something around there, I think that's great. But it doesn't mean you're going to get recruited. It just means you're going to be an event where there are going to be a lot of college coaches. You still have to get them to come watch you play. Right.
Yeah, that's the secret. And I want to kind of get everybody's thoughts on how kids have gotten your attention, right? I've got my own ideas because I deal with these kids every day. And I know that even myself, there's certain college coaches where I may not hear back from them. And usually it's because the kid wasn't quite fitting for them. It wasn't the right fit. But getting to a tournament is step one. Getting a college coach to actually watch you is step two. I mean, this weekend at MLS Next was a great example. I'm sitting there with all the who's, right? Wake, Indiana, they were all there. Everybody you can think of, UCLA. And yet when you go over and talk to them, it's like, yeah, who are you looking at? They're looking at one kid. They're looking at two kids. They're maybe... talk to a nice mid-level D2. They had five kids on their radar from these two teams, and the rest of the kids kind of don't get seen. So what if you're an average player, say a mid-level D2, mid-level NAI, average player in the country, you're above average on the overall soccer scale, but you're not quite at that UCLA, let's say Akron, Indiana level. How do you get the attention of college coaches to get them to come and see you?
I know that this is a cliche answer because I think players and parents hear it a lot, and players hear it from a lot of different sources, but academics go a long way to to catching attention of a coach or being a deciding factor of not of a coach not watching. You may get an email. I used to get emails from players when I was a college coach, and they weren't gonna be an NCAA qualifier, or they weren't going to be able to earn any academic money at the school I was at. And I wasn't at a fully funded D2 school, which is, you know, a 9.9 scholarships. So if they're not going to get any academic money, and they're just an average to slightly above average player, I'm probably not going to be able to be competitive enough to offer them what I need to be successful and what they will want. So that they kind of just go off my radar. That being said, if you have very good academics and if you have a film that's somewhat like interesting, I'm going to give you a chance because it might be able to be a good deal for both of us. Because you'll earn some academic money. I could throw you a little athletic money and you'll be a solid contributor to our team.
Mike, would you tend to agree with that? Or is it different from schools?
I think for sure. You know, I think getting on the radar is really the trick of the whole process here is, you know, Matt mentioned it too, and Joe just mentioned it, but you know, if there's Don, you'll know the number. I don't know the number. There's a million plus high school seniors playing soccer in America today. Some crazy number.
Pretty close. No, pretty close. That's about the number. Yeah. You're right.
And so I would always say as a college coach, okay, so if in theory I have over a million players to choose from, why you? And so your job is to say to me, here's why me, you know? So academics being one part of the puzzle, your interest, legitimate interest in my program. Why are you interested in my program? What do you know about the school? What do you know about the size, the area, all of those factors? You need to demonstrate why you, and so getting the help of your club coach, your high school coach, whoever you're working with to help advocate for you is important, but you have to have those answers to yourself as well. And then you have to proactively, persistently put yourself out there. You know, it's like trying to find a job in some ways. You know, it's really the powers in that of the college coach, because there's a far more number of players than there are spots to play. And so you've got to be, you know, very persistent and constantly putting yourself out there with an organized approach of contact, however that may be. And with email nowadays, it's very easy to be persistently putting your name out in front of people. It used to be back in the old days, Matt will remember, but because he's almost as old as I am, as he just alluded to. But we used to, when I was coaching at Notre Dame, we would start on the West Coast and we would hit the Surf Cup, and then we would travel to Colorado and hit the Rocky Mountain tournament and end up on the East Coast and hit something up in New York or New Jersey, another showcase. And about 7 or 8 club teams would make the exact same journey. You'd be watching the same kids every week all the way across the country. And so a kind of a group of college, that's why the college coaches are all friendly, because we hung out with each other every weekend all across the country in the recruiting worlds. Now it's so spread out. It's so, you know, there's different leagues and different clubs to play.
What do we have, Mike?
All
this
the
weekend we
constantly
had,
change.
We had MLS Next this weekend. We had ECNL this weekend. And we had National League Pro all in the same weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's on top of the events that were sandwiched. Like we have GA this weekend for the girls, and then the weekend before was all the Thanksgiving stuff.
Yeah. And I had an All-American high school goalkeeper contact me because he's playing at a local showcase in Indianapolis over the weekend. He said, hey, can you call these coaches for me? I said, I'm happy to do so, but they're not going to be there because they're at those other events that you already just mentioned. You know, it's a very, very tricky time. And so, again, I don't know how we can keep impressing upon people that really the onus is on the player to figure out how you're going to get in front of these college coaches, whether it's attending a camp or email, video. There's some ways that are a lot easier now than they used to be. I used to have an office stack filled with VHS tapes that we have to try and go through. It's a lot easier now with links and all that stuff. But that's really the key is being persistent and figuring out how and who and, you know, constantly getting in front of these coaches.
Well, that brings up one of the myths that I can just brush on real quickly. And that's, hey, I saw a college coach's name that the college coach is going to be at this tournament because their name is on the list. And therefore, I'm going to get seen, when in reality, a lot of college coaches sign up for a lot of tournaments they know they're not going to be at because they may want a list of certain players from certain clubs at that. Or some coaches are using that to to market their camps too. Those spreadsheets, let's face it. Hey, Matt, here's one that gets thrown out at me a lot. And I always categorize this one as some of the worst advice that I ever hear given to players. And it's very common. Choose the school that you want to attend and then contact those coaches. And I always say it's not great advice because it ignores the soccer bit. So everybody wants to, you know, almost every school, every list of kids, the schools that I see has UCLA and Indiana and Akron and Notre Dame and Florida State on the girls' side and et cetera. But that ignores the fact that they may not be able to play soccer at those schools. They might be able to attend those schools. Why don't you give me your thoughts on that, on maybe a better way for parents to approach this, choosing the schools you want to attend and contacting those college coaches. I don't know if you agree that that's directly bad advice, or maybe there's a better way to approach this, Matt. What do you think?
I think there absolutely is. And I think probably the first part that we need to evaluate is where you actually fit in. And, you know, whether you're talking, you know, right now, if you're a women's soccer player and you're like, I want to play at Santa Clara. Cool. So does everybody else. And everybody's always wanted to play for Jerry at Santa Clara. There's only going to be a select few that get to, and it's the cream of the crop. It doesn't mean that you're not a good player. It doesn't mean that you're not going to play on a team one day that might beat Santa Clara, but if you're not, like we talk about those elite levels, you know, you look at the Final Four teams this year, you know, that are playing there. Notre Dame, they have a really good handle. They're going to get the elite of the elite. Clemson is going to get the elite of the elite. Georgetown, they're going to get the elite of the elite. And also, too, you have to be a genius just to get into school. And then Washington is going to have the elite of the elite. I think what's so fascinating that this Final Four group should give the American-born soccer player hope, because the majority of all four of these teams that are playing for college soccer's Division I prize are American-born players.
I love that you brought that up, because that's been one of the – it's so not fair because of all of these international kids. And it's like, yeah, look what just happened this year. It's not true. Right. Not true.
And you can correct me. I don't think Georgetown has an international player on their roster. And I think Washington has one. And I think Clemson has three. And I think Penn State Notre Dame might have four. Like, I mean, this is predominantly American players. These are players, and that's pretty cool. That being said, you've got to look at all the facets. You've got to look at, and if you're good enough to play at UCLA, I promise you, Ryan Jordan, who's a friend of a lot of people on this call, Ryan will find you. Like, he'll know about you. But if UCLA is not calling you, okay, let's pick the school where the soccer program and their process and their aspirations line up with your ability. That's the first thing. Does the school offer your major? Do you have some things that are kind of non-negotiables for you? Like, you need to go to school near a major metropolitan area, or you want to go to school in the middle of the country, or you want to be 45 minutes from a beach, you know, and those are all things that you and your family will have to sort out. But it's, you have to consider all of these things. And when you think about it, Mike just talked about it, there's a million players and there's a ton of schools. So literally these are, it's like two needles searching for each other in a big stack of needles. So you're going to have to kind of cull through all this, and either you're going to have to get some help or you're going to have to be really specific about it. And again, having been literally until just now a parent in this process, it was, you know, the advice I gave my son is like, okay, where are you good enough to play? And so he put together a list of about 50 schools that he thought he was good enough to play. And I agreed with his list, and we sought some, you know, we got other advice, and I said, you are good enough to play at all those schools. Okay, now do your research, and who's going to be looking for a goalkeeper? You know, and there were some schools that said, man, we'd love to have you. We do not have a need for a goalkeeper in this class. Great. Okay. That doesn't mean you're not good. It just means they're not looking for one. And then you start to go from there. And then when you reach out to the coaches, it's not a blanket email. And I made my son, he was not allowed to copy and paste anything other than his specifics, his name, his grad year, his GPA, his standardized test scores, his address. He was allowed to copy and paste that. Every other email, I said, hey, you're going to craft these to the coaches and be specific and tell them why you would like to be considered for that school. And then also too, and here's the other part, if you have film, great. He attached some film and then he listed some references. And I said, and he said, well, what if they don't know them? I said, you list these references and if anything in your bio or the film caught their eye, they're going to look through their phone to see if they have this person in their phone, or they're going to turn to their assistant. Hey, do you know so-and-so? Cool. Call him about this kid and see if this is what it's supposed to be. Again, it's all resource management. There's no way a kid can do it on their own. They're not enough hours in the day. And, you know, because if you're spending all your time on your college search, well, how are you getting your academics sorted? How are you practicing your football? How are you spending time with your family? Like you're going to have to get some help with this. But I mean, again, it's, you know, you talk about this, I think we're probably going to talk about this. Invariably, there's going to be schools that miss out on players. There was a young man named Breck Shea. And we all know Breck. He's played in the league forever. I saw Breck at an Adidas ESP event and literally got back to the hotel room, called my boss and said, there's this kid from Texas who's going to be amazing. And he's like, I think we're going to pass. And then, like, you know, 5 years later, he's starting for the national team. You're like, yeah, maybe we probably should have handled that one. And then on the flip side, I've had players play for me that college coaches will come to events. And they're like, dude, what a great get. I saw him and I didn't think he was good enough. And man, I should be fired because I missed it. And that's just part of it. So you can't take it personally. Like,
that's right.
The world didn't end. There's so many opportunities.
That's right. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Hey, Mike, because you've been at some pretty high-end academic schools, let me throw another one out at you. My kid chose to play D3 because they care about academics, as if Notre Dame doesn't care about academics.
Yeah.
Or Stanford, or Yale, or Harvard, or Brown, or Valpo, or, yeah. What do you think about that state? Obviously, I know what you think, but what do you have to say about that statement? My kid chose.
No, I mean, I think it's just not true to insinuate that there's not good academic schools at all the different levels.
Yes.
You know, I think that's really the key is to, you know, and part of it too, look, you can get a great education about anywhere. You can go to about any school and get a great education. Some schools you have to maybe go seek out the education a little bit more than other schools. But certainly some of the top end schools in our country, some of the greatest, you know, public schools, you know, a school like the University of Michigan, you know, these are great academic institutions. They don't only exist at the Division III world. Do some very good schools exist at the Division III world? Absolutely, they do. But it's not exclusive to any level.
I think probably all of us would agree on that, right? Anything else you have to say about that? I just wanted to address that little myth that I see out there all the time.
I think it's not just schools, it's coaches too. Like, I haven't talked to very many college coaches who are like, yeah, I don't care how my players do in the classroom. I mean, well, one of my Wayne State College, where I was last at, is not going to be, you know, any in a list of any major prestigious schools, but the last greatest accomplishment I had there, we had our best season the year that I ended up leaving, the year I left after our best season. But in that best season, I also had three players that earned academic All-American, and no other school D1 through D3 in the country had three players that were academic All-Americans that year. And so I think that you want to know how the school and what the program believes in academics, but you want to know what your coach does or what your coach feels about academics. Cause there are also programs and coaches out there who will shy away from players that want to study certain things because that may conflict with practice times. And yeah, so it's important to know where the coach and the program stands on how they view academics and different academic programs as well, because that may deter you from going into what you want to go into.
Yeah. Now, Matt, not to say that the schedule of the year for D1 kid athletes is the same as for D3 athletes. Can you just, in a very short minute, can you kind of summarize the differences that you've noticed between the D3 schedules and the D1 schedules and how that might be suited not because the academics are necessarily higher at the D3, but might be suited for, from a personality perspective, for a certain kind of player, might be more fit for D3 than maybe a high-end D1 program, even if they're a quality player.
100%. I mean, the reality, the difference between Division III from August to December and Division I is negligible, other than the fact that there are athletic scholarships. But they're, the high-level D3 programs function, train, endeavor to play the same style. The difference comes in the spring. In the spring, you're looking at about 45 to 50 days with a Division I program that you're going to spend with them, and actually more. At the Division III level, you're going to spend 16. And when I say 16, that is 15 training dates and one date of competition, or just 16 training dates. So, and you have to get those dates all in with a period of 5 weeks. So the, in terms of the intensity and the volume of training, it will be different. But honestly, the reality is if I was able to go to the majority of parents who haven't maybe, or players for that matter, haven't watched a lot of college soccer, and I took two teams and I put them in just normal one uniform is clean black uniforms with white numbers, and the other one's in a red uniform with white numbers. I didn't tell you where they were from, and I didn't tell you what their divisions were. You wouldn't be able to tell, because it's the stratifications between Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, all of that is, there are some differences for sure, but at the end of the day, it doesn't define what you're going to accomplish as a player. This, when you talk about choosing to play college soccer, it's about the right fit. And if you are D1 or bust, you may be setting yourself up not to find the right fit. Or if you're a parent's like, well, I only want my kid to play Division III, you may not be finding the right fit. Well, it has to be Division II. You may not be finding the right fit. So find the right fit, which means a coach that believes in you, a coach that has plans for you in their system, the academic programs you think you want to study, a location that's palatable to you, and then the opportunities to provide you an education. Because the reality is, the majority of these kids, not to borrow the NCAA's tagline, they ain't going pro in football. They are going to go pro in a million other things. And so it has to be about the right fit. And, you know, it'd be like when I was 16 years old, like I'm only going to date supermodels. Had I stuck to that, I would probably still be single and without any kids. So
you came pretty close though, Matt. So you're,
I
you're
did. All right. I did become pretty close, but at the same time, you know, she's a mortgage banker, not a supermodel. So, yeah, but that's the thing, right? You have to, this is a learning and educational process. And if you're not curious about the educational part and learning new stuff, golly, you're going to be pretty limited.
And by the way, folks, if you didn't know, also Mike Avery's wife is a Division I volleyball coach. So, I mean, he sees this from all kinds of different perspectives also. You brought up a really good point though, Matt. And Joe, I want your perspective on this from the women's side. And I want your perspective on this for the men's side, Mike and Matt. Matt, you just touched on it. The myth of what D1 and D2 means, okay, is it all a better level? And then I want you guys to discuss that stratification piece, the piece that, look, the bottom 10 D1s, 20 D1s, a lot different than the mid-major D1s that are competing, might make the first round of the NCAAs. And I always say, I think the women's side, there's probably 9 different stratification levels of D1. The men's side, maybe not quite that many, maybe not quite that steep. But I want to hear from you guys, and let's start with you, Joe, about the myth of D1, D2, and the stratification.
So I can kind of speak on, especially living mostly in between the area of Chicago and Denver for my entire life, I can speak on the Midwest and the division that I coached in and the separations for that. So the team that I coached for, there were many Division I teams that were better than my Division II team, well, a lot of them, but the two or three top teams in our Division II conference, the top team, Minnesota State Mankato, is one of the top D2 teams consistently in the country every single year. They would be a good Division I team, especially in the area of the country that they exist in. And it's because they are funded well, they're really well coached. They have great facilities. They're a Division I sized school. They're about 15,000 students, but they're a Division I school in the Division II world, in my opinion. And so that's common wherever you look in every region of the Division II world, is there's these D2 teams that not only would be better than the bottom third of the Division I teams, but they'd be competitive with the middle third and some of the, you know, top 100 teams on the lower end of things because they have the athletes to do it. And I think Division I is just based a lot on the women's side of what area of the country they're in and the Power Five and the level of the conference. D2, the stratification is more based on the amount, the funding that's available for scholarships wise. Cause you can have, another really good team, the University of Central Missouri is in Warrensburg, Missouri on the women's side. They're quality. They're in Warrensburg, Missouri. That's not any major metropolitan area. Funding facilities, good coaching can take D2 teams really, really high. If you don't have those things, no matter where you're located, it's going to be a struggle in D2. But that's why when people say it's D1 or bust, I'm like, all right, well, I know about three or four D2 teams that you wouldn't be a high scholarship player for because they're looking at players that are better than you. So
I think you're spot on, Joe. It depends on what area of the country, what conference, very stratified. Mike, what are your observations on that? And then if you wouldn't mind just tacking on to the end of that, the thought that you must play D1 if you want to play pro, since you're involved in the pro game, Mike.
Sure. I agree completely with Joe in that you can't just say Division I, II, III, NEI, junior college goes just straight down in that order. The levels are all, as clear as I spent the fall, this fall, traveling to watch games. I saw probably 50 games live all over the country. Division I, Division II, Division III, junior college. Looking for players, not only for my team for USL II, but also potential pros when we make the jump to USL I. And kind of to speak to both parts of your question, Don, the one event that I was at that had the most professional scouts at the event was the NAI National Championship Tournament. There were more pro scouts in the crowd at any other event that I went to in the NAI event. Now, that might change this weekend at the Division I College Cup. I hope it does. But so far in this fall, that has been, you know, the most. And so but it just tells you there's talent everywhere. And so I think you have to look at it program by program, not the tag that's whatever attached to it at the end. There's some very, very, very good Division I programs, no question. There's some very, very good Division II programs, Division III programs, junior college programs. You know, there are so many programs around the country that have such quality attached to them. And then there's also the other side of the coin, and I'm not going to name any of those, but there's some that aren't at that level. And so the job, again, is of the student is to do their research and say, what is this program about? You know, what is the coaching staff about? What are the facilities like? What are the academics? You know, all of the questions that they go into. And I tell kids all the time, you know, we have a tryout coming up, an open tryout on January 3rd. And, I'll tell them that day as well. But the difference between making it and not making it is pretty simple. So the difference is this. It's you have to be good on the right day in front of the right person. That's how you make it. You got to be good on the right day in front of the right person. You might be a great player and have a stinker on the day and the right person is there. You're not going to get picked up. Right. And so you have to be good every time you play. There's really the only answer because you never know when the right person's going to be there. And so the only way to make sure for yourself is just to be good every day. And so that's really the key in all of this is you've got to showcase your ability as a player on a daily basis in the event that the right person is there. And the pro scouts, you don't even know when they're there. They're just sitting in the crowd watching the game. They're not in their shirts and, you know, all their colors flying. They're just watching games. And so you've got to be good all the time.
And now, and T, tips for the players out there. If you see a guy out there taking a picture of watching a game with his feet showing, that's a pro. That's a pro.
That right could there. Be. That could well be.
If you follow Mike on Instagram or anything, you'll see that's. And I've been having fun with him on that. I know Joe. I know Joe had to step out. So we're getting ready to wrap this up here. Just a couple more questions, guys. So here's another myth. If you don't play high school, it's going to hurt your chances to get seen. And that's this myth is being spread by club coaches who'd like to get paid for 10 months a year. And, you know, in my opinion, this is maybe that's cynical of me, but maybe it's true in your opinion. I don't know. If a kid plays high school, is it going to hurt their chance to play in college? Matt, why don't you start with that one, if you would, please. And I want to hear what you have to say, Mike.
I would say no on both accounts. If a kid tells me that, like, hey, I'm in a really good club setup and we're not playing high school, great. Then, you know, that means that they certainly have a consistency into the periodization of their training. I think that this high school myth, high school and periodization and the health and the amount of games and trainings that student athletes get, absolutely, it can be too much. What I will say is this, though, if you really want to find out how good a player is, drop him into a high school game and see if he makes everybody else better or if she makes everybody else better.
Good point.
And that's really cool. And so for me, and then also, too, if you're talking about a kid that you're going to bring into your college soccer environment where you're going to ask them to sacrifice and give up their student experience for the betterment of their school, and they're really going to wear the colors proudly. Well, it probably would behoove me to pick a young player that has done that at some level. So if a player fights hard for their high school team and really enjoys it, well, I think they're probably going to translate really well to the social aspect of putting on your school's colors. Is the high school environment problematic at times? For sure it is. At the same time, Mike is a League Two coach. He's going to tell you, you know what? The college soccer landscape is problematic for League Two, and it's problematic for League One in terms of finding the right fits of players and all the things. You know, just like when the Premier League comes over and says, these players from the MLS, it's problematic of the way that everybody has things that they like about other systems and everything they don't like about other systems. At the end of the day, though, for me, high school soccer is, and I don't want to, in terms of a myth, I don't really care. I want the player to be in an environment that they think is healthy for them and helps them emotionally and helps them psychologically and helps their football environment. But if I'm recruiting a player that is a number 10 and does okay in bossing the game at the club level, and then I go and watch them at high school and they're really bossing the game and being a leader and pushing and pulling players where they need to go. And man, that gets me excited because I'm like, oh, okay, this is a kid who understands how to fight and understands how to grind. And, you know, and the great thing, the last thing I say about high school is high school games. I have yet to go to a high school game where they really care about how they play. Those kids are going and trying to win matches for their schools. And ultimately, every college coach, whether they want to admit it or not, your job security depends on whether or not those young people, 18 to 22 year olds, are going to find wins. Because if your school's not winning, there's, you know, it could be problematic. So yeah, I'm really okay with high school soccer. Just what's best for the individual player, right?
Yeah, I like that perspective, and that's that kind of exactly why I think. What do you think? Anything to add to that, Mike, or pretty much the same?
No, I would agree. I think it's an individual decision. I think that you have to be able to, whatever path you take, whether you're leaving your high school to go to a year-round academy or you decided not to go to the academy because you want to play in high school, I think it's got to fit you, and you should be able to explain it to whoever you're talking to about it when that time comes. And as long as they have some reasoning behind it, I think that that's good. I think there's so many positives to take out of a high school season. There's also positives to take out of not playing high school and going to the club. So I think it's totally individual. Every situation is different. You just got to weigh it. And then whatever you decide to do, just be able to back it up.
I like that. Okay. Last one, guys. And then we'll wrap this up. So common line that I get. I'm in talks with coaches. I'm in talk with D1 coaches or whatever they say. And then I start to inquire it a little bit, and it turns out they got an email. They got an invite to a camp. What does legitimate talk with a high school, with a college coach look like? Like, what does it look and feel like when a coach has maybe seen your video, really wants to talk to you, get you on the phone, and then wants to see you play in person and wants to get you on campus, that kind of thing, a real recruiting experience rather than, hey, we're having a camp this weekend, come. What does that look like, Matt?
Well, one, and this is for all you prospective student athletes out there, I don't care who the school is, when they send you an email, email them back. Even if the email says, hey, right now I'm not interested, I'm looking at other things. But for me, the way I start this with the players, I send them either a text message or an email and let them know that they've been brought to my attention either through my own eye or someone I trust, and I'd love to discuss things with them. And then what that I do is I send them a questionnaire. And the reason I send them a questionnaire is it gets all the demographic information that I can then send over to admissions. So should we decide to go down that road, we've got a lot of good information. Also too, is their GPA going to match up, all that stuff. And then, you know, you start to have a conversation. But for me, a player that, when I send a message to a player and say like, hey, I'd like to jump on a call with you, that's, you're having a conversation. Because, but just if it's email only, that's great. But I think that, you know, I can't tell you how many times players ghost college coaches early in the process because for whatever reason. And a lot of times they're like, oh no, I'm only talking to D1 schools. The hard part about that is that, you know, this is, the more coaches you talk to, the more you're going to learn and be comfortable in talking to those coaches, the more you're going to refine your pitch, the more you're going to be able to ask questions so that when, like Mike said, when you have the right conversation with the right person on the right day, the opportunities for you to play in college come about. But just sending an email, that's not it. But, you know, but now also too, I've recruited kids that I've only ever talked to via text because that was the mode it is. But when there's, you know, two or three back and forth messages, yeah, I think you're probably talking to those coaches. But, you know, you need to get them on the phone. And then, you know, I think for me, you know, what I do not allow any player to do is I do not allow players to commit until they visit the school. You know, and even where I am now, players like, I want to come. I'm going to be an owl. I'm like, well, listen, not until you come visit the school. Once you've set foot on campus, then I'll say, yes, you can come play here, but not until then. So the talking part, it's actually having a conversation, but one phone call doesn't make talking, one text message doesn't make talking, and one email doesn't make talking. But again, players, please, 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 please take the time to get back to people, because you'd be amazed at how many things and how much everybody knows. The world is just cyclical. It'd be like if I was rude to some kid, well, how am I going to recruit his buddy from the same town to maybe go to high school? That's something. Just, and like Mike said, you never know who's who. So if a college coach is asking you because they're interested in playing for you, man, that's just a win. You have won the day. And that's pretty awesome. So take every opportunity for what it is, just that, an opportunity.
That's fantastic. What are your thoughts on that, Mike?
No, I completely agree. I think it's an interesting, like Matt, I have a son who's a senior in high school. And so we're getting, you know, it started with one shoebox and then it became a much bigger box full of just college materials from admissions. And so it's kind of an interesting time because in some ways rosters are being restricted because of COVID, but colleges are demanding more students. And so they're in hyperdrive trying to recruit students. And so it would be easy to say, well, look, I get so much information from this school. Are you getting it from admissions? Are you getting it because you're on a mailing list? Are you really having a conversation with the head coach or their coaching staff? Because some people work differently on how they do things. And so you've got to try and parcel your way through that a little bit and figure out, you know, what is this opportunity? Is it really there? And I totally agree. I thought, know, there's very few times in your life that people want you. So the idea that you're going to ghost or big time some anybody when they're actually just trying to be kind and help you and give you an opportunity seems ridiculous to me. And I think you have to keep in mind, I mean, there's 204, 5, 6, I don't know, Division I programs in the country on the men's side. Every coach knows each other. They all know each other. And the circle is so small. And that extends beyond their own division, Division II, Division III. And so they talk all the time. And so, you know, I would always say, you know, if a player is hard for me in the recruiting process, I'm pretty sure that means they're going to be hard for me for 4 years if they end up coming. Why do I want to deal with that?
Yeah.
You know, if it's filling out a questionnaire, is it just a hoop to jump through? Possibly, but do it because that's the process. It's what you have to do it. And, it, you know, if it takes you 3 months and four phone calls to fill out a piece of paper, I don't have time to deal with that. I got too many other things going on. And so, again, making the process as smooth for everybody. And if you're not interested, just give them a call. Say, look, I appreciate your interest, but I'm moving in a different direction. Just the same way that you would hope they would do that with you. You know, these are just relationship building skills that we've got to try and get to the bottom of and not hide behind text and email all the time.
I love that. I love every bit about what you guys are saying is exactly what we tell all of our clients. It's exactly spot on. Well, I want to kind of wrap this up, but I want to give, because I know you guys both have some different projects and things that maybe you'd like to plug. Are either of you guys going to the convention in Kansas City this year?
I'm a maybe on that one. I like it better when you guys put them in cool places like Los Angeles or DC. Kansas City is great, but I've got better barbecue in North Carolina. No, I'm actually going to the NCAA convention, which is right around the same time.
Yeah.
This is the one thing I'll leave you with. And this is the highest number of goals scored by a player in Major League Soccer is by Chris Wondolowski, who played at a Division II school and had
Chico State right down the road from me. Yay.
And he didn't play right off the bat at Chico. He had to grind his way into that roster.
Yeah.
Okay. And then now the guy who's probably going to be the backup for the men's national team, good Lord willing that they make it to Qatar, is going to be a guy named Matt Turner, who played at Fairfield. And if anyone knows that Fairfield's mascot without thinking about it, they're the Stags, by the way. It takes all places. But there's 205 Division I programs. If you take an average of 5 seniors leaving each year, right? That's only 1,000 players. There were 1,000 players in the under-19 division at the ECNL event in Greer, South Carolina. So the opportunity to play Division I, the sheer statistics, if you've got 1,000 spots versus 1 million high school seniors, like your chances are pretty small. So, you know, playing college soccer is hard enough as it is, but if you're only going to limit yourself to Division I, golly. And then, and the wonderful thing is maybe you are good enough for Division I, maybe you are, but that's also too, I have yet to find a college coach at a Division II or a Division III or a Division I school that's really doing what they're doing. If you come to their school and you're a great teammate and you're great in the classroom and you're great on the soccer field, and at the end of the year, you can sit down and say, coach, I think the level of competition here at our program, and you're helping that team win, by the way, I think I probably need to go up a level, much like in professional football for when the kid kills it at Atlanta United and Atlanta United says, you know what, Almiron, absolutely, you need to go to the Premier League and we're going to help you do that. You know, those are all discussions to have, but and this is the other thing, the transfer portal, college coaches are going to start at the transfer portal before they go look for freshmen, because those are players that have already proven that they know how to play college.
Proven
soccer.
Commodity, so, right? There's a value to proven a proven commodity.
And that's, you know, so it's one of those things, but you know, for me, I'm going to go to the Final Four this weekend, excited to watch some games, go to the NCAA convention. And then I am in the beginning of January, I'm going to put on a pair of jeans and probably a pair of New Balance shoes and a button down shirt and go on full dad mode and carry up luggage and a TV into a dorm room. So pretty excited.
If you guys
I don't own the New Balance, so I might have to go buy them, but yeah. But that's kind of where I am right now.
Well, if you guys do happen to be there, check us out on Podcast Row. Hey, by the way, for anybody who's listening to this, if you want to go to the convention, if you've never been before, it's the largest coaching organization on planet Earth. There'll be guys from all over the world doing presentations on field sessions and lectures. If you go to UnitedSoccerCoachesConvention.org, you can get all the details. You can register. I know that if you're coming, please come by and check us out on Podcast Row. Inside College Soccer will have a little booth on Podcast Row. We'll be interviewing coaches. So come check us out. Mike, you've got a couple of projects. Do you want to plug some of them for us?
Well, yeah. I mean, we are hosting our open tryout for anybody that wants to be seen, that hasn't been seen, and have an opportunity to play in a brand new growing professional club. January 3rd, all the information is on the Fort Wayne FC website. That's the first thing. And then beyond that, I'm actually really excited. A charity that I work with, we are doing a run to Africa in March to do coaching clinics and put on some clinics and pass out some gear. And we're really excited about that. So that's the next big thing on the table for me, besides all the work I'm doing with Fort Wayne.
Fantastic. And Valpo won.
Yeah, my wife's team is in the volleyball version of the NIT, and so they're playing on Friday night in the semifinals, the furthest they've ever run. Look, I'm the only coach that you guys will talk to that's not even the best coach when he goes to bed at night in the bed. So I'm fully aware of where my status in the world. My wife's a rock star, and she's killing it. So we're excited about that. It's been a really fun season, so we're excited about that.
Thank you.
Who are they playing?
They play the winner of Connecticut and North Florida play tonight. So they play the winner of those two.
How exciting.
At home. So we get to host. So that's exciting.
Awesome.
Very cool. Well, thank you to both of you guys for doing this for me. And Joe Cleary had to run out. But thanks to Joe. He's got a Nebraska Soccer Talk podcast too. Anybody up in the Nebraska area, Iowa area, he talks about all the high school and club and college and what the kids are doing. It's pretty interesting. So thanks again, guys, for doing this for me. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, Don.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.